She, of course, could not bear to inspect Monsieur Renard herself, but she learned from the local police that the corpse had been badly mutilated. His eyes were gone, his nose hacked off, many cuts and lacerations made along the length of his arms and legs. They could not determine what weapon had been used, but many of the wounds had been inflicted by something smaller than a pocket knife, and the damage suggested a blunt, crude edge, like stone. It was not until the next day that the police inspectors arrived, for Plomec's police department had no detectives, and inspectors had to be sent for from Quimper. They first went to the police station to inspect the body, which the local police had been keeping, and then rode their motor car up the hill to survey the dead man's property. Once that was done, they paid a visit to the woman who'd found the body. When they arrived, Magritte had prepared tea and cakes. The two inspectors were named Rousseau and Vallon. Rousseau was the more senior of the two, a stately gentleman whose kind face and well-kept white mustache reminded Magritte of Marshal Joffre. Vallon was a young man with red hair and a face like a peach. Rousseau accepted the tea Magritte offered him and held, but did not eat, a finger cake, while Vallon would not even glance at her offerings. They sat at Magritte's dining table. To Magritte's surprise, despite being the junior partner, Vallon was the one asking the questions.
How long have you lived in Plomec, madame?
2 years now.
And you lived in Paris before?
Yes, sir, until 1918.
Why did you leave Paris?
It felt empty without Clément. Things that I had once loved were only reminders, and there was the influenza. So many people were dying. I didn't feel safe in that crowded city anymore.
A stream of similar tedious questions followed, and Vallon continued to scribble on his notepad while Rousseau looked around the cottage, his mind seemingly elsewhere.
Any children?
She flinched. 7 trips to the hospital. 7 bundles of bloody sheets.
No, sir. And I don't see how that's relevant here.
Vallon wrote something down while Rousseau frowned, the corners of his mustache drooping.
That is a shame, he said. My children and my grandchildren, too, are my life. A cottage like this would be so much happier with the patter of tiny feet.
Part of Magritte wanted to laugh. Instead, she only nodded dumbly. She looked to Inspector Rousseau.
I think I should like a drink. Sir, would you care for a glass of wine?
We're not to drink on duty, Vallon said.
But Rousseau ignored him.
I'll have some brandy if you have some.
Magritte got up to fetch the brandy. She listened as she moved, overhearing the two inspectors muttering to each other. She made out only one word from Vallon.
Obvious.
What was obvious? She returned with 2 glasses of brandy. Rousseau accepted his with an avuncular smile. As she drank her brandy, Vallon continued to ply her.
I want to make sure I have this right, he said, eyes on his sketch pad. The coroner places the time of death at 5 o'clock in the morning, while the local police say you arrive to inform them of your finding the body at 6 o'clock in the evening. Is that correct?
Yes, I went to the bank. You've talked to Herve, haven't you?
We spoke to the banker, yes, Rousseau said. A very nice fellow. You went to the bank, returned home, saw the crows, found the body, and then returned to the village to alert the police.
Yes, as I've said.
Her attention was drawn away from Vallon's fuzzy pink face to the window. The light coming from the window was the slanting afternoon sun, so bright Magritte had to blink. Framed in that light was a dark shape, something small and vaguely human. Vallon's gaze followed Magritte's to the window, but by the time he turned his head, the dark blot had vanished, and there was only the blinding rays of sunshine.
Answer me something, please. Magritte said, her whole body clammy. Am I your suspect?
Rousseau stood up and began to pace around, glass of brandy in hand. Vallon narrowed his eyes at her.
We have no suspect as of yet, he said, but the death is indubitably a murder. There is also the matter of the butchered dog.
Magritte felt a little muscle around her eye twitch. She said she was very sorry about what had happened to the dog, just as she was distraught at what had happened to her neighbor. She wanted to scream at the men, wanted to tell them the truth, that it was the lieutenant who had killed Renard and his dog. But she kept her silence. Nero Gallo is leaning up against the kitchen cabinets, hands tucked in his pockets. His dark hair is even longer than it was in high school, and it's hanging in his face. That doesn't cover up the bruise under his right eye, or the nasty cut on his lip. And neither of those injuries can mar the outrageous beauty of his face. In fact, they only serve to highlight it. Nero is proof of the perversity of the universe. Never has such a dangerous object been disguised in such an appealing wrapper. He's like a berry, so vivid and juicy that it makes your mouth water just looking at it. But one taste will poison you. He's liquid sex in a James Dean frame. Everything about him, from his fog-gray eyes to his pouty lips to his arrogant swagger, is calculated to make your heart freeze up in your chest and then jolt back to life if he so much as glances at you. Far from being annoyed,